Vande Sri Krishna Chaitanya Nityananda Sahodita Odadaye Pushpavanto Chittau Shandau Tamonudau. Translation. I offer my respectful obeisances unto Sri Krishna Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, who are like the sun and moon. They have arisen simultaneously on the horizon of Goda to dissipate the darkness of ignorance and thus wonderfully bestow benediction upon all. So as we speak, we'll be referring to verses that follow this verse, as well as Srila Prabhupada's purport. Om Gyanatimadandasya Gyananjana Shalabaya Chakshurum Utamina Tasmai Shri. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasadi Gaura Bhaktavinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. From time to time, actually, at every moment, it is essential to remember that we are able to come to bhakti and practice bhakti and achieve the perfection of life because of this sun and moon that have arisen together. We often explain, and we often should remember, that Krishna is very strict in his presentation to the conditioned souls. And so therefore, even we read Bhagavad Gita, which is a synopsis of the Vedic Siddhanta, perfect conclusion, we may become a bit intimidated. This is too stiff, this is too hard, although I know it's the best. Krishna has made his offer at the end of Bhagavad Gita. You give up all your conceptions, shut down your plan-making factory, discard your game plan, and take my plan. Don't worry about material actions and reactions. I'll take care of all that. I'll give you shelter. But we find that offer to be a bit difficult to take. It seems like we're leaving the known. Although the known is troublesome, we've suffered so much, we can't give it up, can't leave it, because it is the known. And we are conditioned. Even though we're being kicked, even though we're being trampled, indeed, even though we're being incinerated, it still is the known. And of course, while you're being pulverized, smashed, and incinerated, there are some flavors amidst the incineration. It's like meat eaters, they like smoked meats, yes? So similarly, while we're being incinerated in a forest fire, Davanala, the forest fire material existence, we think we're relishing some flavors. So even though we're suffering, even though we're in ignorance, we think, what else is there to do? So many of you have told me how your parents advise you. And in almost all cases, the parents aren't living together, but still, they have good advice. Just enjoy life. Be as happy as you can be in your way. Follow your dream. Find your path to happiness. As Sureshwar Prabhu was telling me, I think he told you all too, your father's advice. He was 18 years old, and I mean, what's this all about? What's the purpose of life? What's happening?
Is this all that there is?
And more or less his father told him, that's right, son. You've achieved enlightenment. This is all that there is. All you can do is find some pursuit to keep you occupied for the duration of your life so you don't go crazy. That's all there is. I say this so you can begin to appreciate more how, without knowledge of the spiritual reality, and even more than knowledge, without taste of the spiritual reality, in this age of Kali especially, you're not going to give up material life. Even though you're suffering, even though it's pointless, you know nothing better. And where do you turn for a superior taste of reality? Religious thinking is not enough. Just be good, and you'll go to heaven. Of course, people haven't been concerned with that in New Zealand for 50 years. Be good, and God will be good to you. Don't be too bad. Don't do too many bad things. But, of course, almost all of you were considering. The bad things, they seem to be the best things. The mischief, the naughtiness, that seems to be where the nectar is. And of course, your parents couldn't give you any good reason why you should delay your naughty activities. At best, what can the parents say? This now is not the time. Later, when you're older. Yes, these things are the nectar of life, but now is not the time. How did that go over? Naturally, the teenagers, they quickly realize, well, if that's the nectar of life, why should I delay? You can't give me a good reason. Why'd you delay? Simply wait till you get older, and it'll be better. Okay. It may well indeed be better when I'm older, but it'll be good now too. So no one has any wholesome reason why the mind and senses should be controlled, other than old-fashioned morality. Whether the morality is old-fashioned or contemporary, it has no attractiveness, certainly, and it has no dynamics because there's no knowledge of the superior reality. You see, bhakti, in its incomparable completeness, is not ultimately concerned with morality. Morality is a phenomenon of the material world. It's to deal with material bodies and minds. But at the pinnacle of bhakti, you're not dealing with material bodies and minds. You're not dealing with the material world. So therefore, unless spiritual knowledge gives you an understanding of the non-moral reality, how can it be complete? So many people have rejected various religions because, well, okay, I be good, I believe, and then I go where? Heaven? No, where's that? What do you do there? No one can give me any understanding of what the superior reality is. You just tell me the negatives. If I'm not good, I risk burning in the fire for eternity. No one can give me any knowledge of what's better, and most important, you can't give me a taste of what's better. So even though I may have some idea that the taste of sense gratification on the mundane plane is hackneyed and stale, at least it's something. Maybe some of you thought this during your years of rampage. That, well, this is not all that it's celebrated to be, but hey, it's something. Yes? Any of you thought like that? Yeah. You were a bit intelligent. You didn't fall 100% victim to the propaganda. This is great. It doesn't get any better than this. This is what it's all about. You just thought, hey, this is quite deficient. This is quite incomplete, but no one can tell me anything better to do. So, hey, what do you want out of me? I say this so we can begin to appreciate even more the contribution of Krishna coming as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Balaram coming as Lord Nityananda. They are giving not only knowledge of the Supreme Reality, but they're giving the taste. And of course, as Srila Prabhupada famously pointed out, they're actually giving the taste first, even though you don't have the knowledge. Therefore, their mercy is inconceivable. Whether you know about Krishna or not, whether you know about the spiritual reality or not, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Nityananda are giving you the taste of love of Krishna. Taste this first, and then we'll talk about what it is. No question of believe. Believe, and then we can discuss. Follow strictly mystic yoga or the path of Jnana Marga, impersonal knowledge. Or follow very precisely good karma activity. And then we can discuss. No. Sri Chaitanya, Sri Nityananda say, taste first. You don't even know what you're tasting. Yeah. But taste it. And you'll find it's incomparable. Supremely exquisite. After you taste, then we discuss what it is. And upon our discussing what it is, we can then go over the various procedures, protocols, rules and regulations, so that you can preserve the taste you got, and also so that taste will increase. So therefore, the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, is celebrated as incomparable. It's not just some kind of religious rah-rah talk. Yeah, our avatars are the best. People, you know, cheer on their local sports team or whatever. No, and Kaviraj Goswami invites you into Chaitanya Charitamrita to apply your logic and reason. Apply your powers of analytical dissection, and you'll find that nothing compares to the mercy of Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda. No one knows who is Krishna, and they're distributing the taste of love of Krishna. That means they're distributing the taste of the Supreme Reality. So you taste, and then you start to wonder, what is this? Is there some other existence possible? So it's very important for us to understand why we have an aversion to spiritual impetus, an aversion to pushing forward to the ultimate goal of life. It's based on ignorance. The material experience is so vivid in our consciousness, and it sucks out all your ambitions, all your aspirations, all your hopes. That's why Krishna explains in Bhagavad Gita, Asha Pasha Shataya Bhata. You're bound by a network, hundreds and hundreds of false hopes. Material existence is nothing more than a false hope. Feel that false hope in you. It's a contamination. I will enjoy. Enjoyment will come my way. My own peace will come. it'll be all right to some degree. There'll be some rainy days, but in my life, the sun is going to break through the clouds. This is what Krishna means when he says, Asha Pasha Shatara Bhata, bound by a network of false hopes. Your hopes are imprisoning you. That optimism about material life. You know the story of the first Sunday feast lecture I heard from Srila Prabhupada. It's not in the folio. It's not in the Veda base. Unfortunately, there's no recording preserved of it. He is roaring. If you're optimistic about material life, you're an animal. Now, to a newcomer, this could sound very way over the top. What do you mean? Is this some kind of defeatist, negativistic philosophy? What is it to you if you're not optimistic that you're going to have some enjoyment in life? Just like with the rain, we're optimistic that the clouds will part, the sun will shine. Supposedly tomorrow the sun will shine and maybe just a few showers. So we're optimistic. It's not always going to be like this. So similarly, we look at our life, our material life, our material goals, our ambitions. It's not always going to be tough, right? We look at our relationships. They're tough. They're strained moments, but there'll be some good times too. In traditional Western materialistic society, that means probably up until the 60s started. Let's say you go back to the 1950s. I think no one here remembers the 1950s. The idea was you work hard and then you can look ahead to retirement at the age of 60 when you get your pension from whatever industry or factory you worked for. You get your government pension. So you could just look ahead. By the time I'm 60, I can retire and then life will be nice. Of course, that's all finished now. Even that kind of artificial security is gone. Just like the 40-hour work week is gone. Similarly, the dream of retiring when you're 60 is gone. So that hope is finished. Now, more and more, the hope is the weekend. I'll have a total bash. I'll be totally blasted, totally wasted. There's nothing beyond that. Forget about retirement. Who knows what's going to happen by the time I'm 60? And it doesn't even matter. The weekend is coming. Who am I going to be with? What are we going to do? Where are we going to go? Better do something with someone than do nothing. How will this situation of false optimism, false hope, be corrected? Why would Srila Prabhupada so boldly pronounce at a Sunday open lecture? Wasn't like during the week when just the in-house devotees were there? No, this was a Sunday gathering. A Sunday feast program. Boldly declare, if you're optimistic about material life, you're an animal. Such a challenge to Western psychology. I just kicked it out. continue to explain. If you're a real human being, you must be pessimistic. Now that sounds, to ordinary ears, doesn't sound very enlivening. I mean, if I'm a real human being, I gotta be pessimistic. That's no fun. I want to think good about my material life, my options. Think about that. Your options. When you think that you have options in material life, you get enlivened. When there are no options, then you get depressed. You feel trapped, pressurized, compartmentalized. I've got no options. I've got to do this. There's no other way. But as soon as you can see a panorama of material options, then you get enlivened. That's why people like to shop. Oh, I've got the wherewithal, I've got the money, and now I can just go from shop to shop and pick what I want. Did you know that there's actually a precise psychology about the way malls are constructed? They're meant to imitate cathedrals. That's why in the best malls you'll see very lofty ceilings, vaulted ceilings. They want you to feel that you're entering into heaven. They actually do this on purpose. Didn't you wonder why these best malls have such high ceilings? And you know, why would they spend their money to do like that? Why not just make everything flat, level, low level? What are the cheap malls? They're like that, but the top malls, they soar into the sky. They do it on purpose. You're meant to feel that you are fulfilling your highest aspirations. It's all architectural science. And then, in the state-of-the-art malls, there are no doors to the stores. You're walking through the mall and you don't have to enter a revolving door. You don't have to pull open a door. It's open front to the store. So that you just feel, you know, you're totally welcome. And you can just float from one realm to another, this shop to that shop. And then the staff are taught that as soon as you walk in, they make eye contact with you. You may wonder why when you walk in, immediately someone asks you, can I help you? You may think, why don't they just let me shop, leave me alone? When I pick out something I want, then I'll... But actually they're taught, they're trained that establish a personal connection. As soon as you walk into the store, yeah. And that way you feel some personal obligation. Of course, our devotees are a bit different. I know I rarely have to go into any mall or anything like that, but there are very rare occasions when I do. I just kind of walk into the store and just, you know, keep my eyes to myself. And, yes, can we help you? They keep trying to catch my eye. And they kind of drift off thinking, oh, he's one of those. So this is all calculated. The whole mall experience is calculated. The music playing, it's all scientifically researched. Different types of music for different regions. Just make you feel upbeat and make you feel connected so you'll spend the money. And the whole point is, by spending your money at the mall, you are participating in an act of redemption. Shopping redeems self. It gives you a feeling of worthwhile existence, that you have done something that is very significant and it will relieve the self. That's why they even call it retail therapy. By your shopping, you've engaged in therapy. And there's nothing better than to have so many options. You've got the money, you can choose. See, I was on the plane from Auckland to Sydney a few weeks ago. And the flight attendant lady was, talking to some of the passengers. Oh, so you're going to Sydney, huh? Yeah. Gonna spend a bit of money, huh? It's all part of the experience, You pay money to get on the plane, to go somewhere else, to shop. Shopping in Sydney will be different than shopping in Auckland. So they were all just discussing that. Yeah, going over there to spend some money, huh? In other words, you're going over there for ritualistic purification and acting according to your constitutional position. Engaging in Rasa. And of course the people, they're into it. Yeah, let me spend your money, that's right. Yeah. The men and the ladies, they were upbeat about it. We'll be shopping. That's just one example of the optimism that is an inherent part of successful material life. And this is what materialists want you to feel. They want you to buy in. They don't want you standing on the side. They want you to get into the action. Those of you who work in the corporate world, you often tell me how the higher managers are always trying to get you to strive for a higher position. Even if there's no possibility of you getting a higher position, still they want you to think that way. Because that striving, that aspiration, makes you more productive. So they're often enticing you. You could go to a higher level. Just keep working hard and try to work a bit harder. We've earmarked you. We've noted that you have some potential. Just increase your dedication, and you never know what can happen. We've got our eye on you. Wow. Just work harder. So even though they may never promote you, even though everyone can clearly see there's no room above you, still, you work harder somehow or other. Even if I can't make advancement in this company, I'll work harder, and when I change jobs, I'll get a good recommendation. There's always options out there. And you have to watch what is called your personal brand. Always have to be on guard about that. How are you being perceived? Just like there's a brand of car or brand of clothes or brand of cereal. Similarly, in the working world, you are a brand. How are you being perceived? How are you, what's your prestige of your brand? So you're always polishing your brand. Always touching up how your brand is presented, how others see you at the workplace. So in this way, you feel you have options. If not at this workplace, at another workplace. So even though there are no options at this workplace, I'll get a good referral, good recommendation. In this way, you're induced just to work harder and harder. You've got to believe and invest in material life. Often I advise devotees in that situation. Just, if possible, be frank with them and tell them, look, the corporation needs good middle-level managers. So some persons just want to stay where they are at the middle level. They don't want to get into the competition for the top post. But you can rely on those persons to shore up the middle. Yes, I've told that to a few devotees, and they tried it, and they say it worked. Their bosses were always pushing them, come on, you're kind of intelligent. and you've been around for a few years. You know, try for the higher levels. Of course, higher level means higher anxiety, higher responsibility, and the pay is not commensurate. So they told their bosses, look, I'm doing a good job, right? Yes, yes, you're doing a good job. You're satisfied with my performance. Yes, we're satisfied with your performance. Well, can we just keep it like that then? I'm not jumping jobs. I've been here for years. I'm not, so many people come and go. Here I am doing my job responsibly. You're completely satisfied. So I appreciate that you recognize I have potential and you want me to try for the top post, but look, I've got a family. I'm really into my family life, and why don't we just leave it the way it is? You can depend on me to shore up the middle level. So, okay. Yeah, you're one of those. All right. This disease of thinking that you have to be optimistic about material life is senseless. But if you don't know anything better, you'll think this is negative, this is cynicism. What do you mean? What did Srila Prabhupada mean when he said, a human being must be pessimistic? How can you go through life just being pessimistic? You can just imagine. In sports, you're in competitive sports, and you're thinking, well, we're just going to lose every game anyway. what kind of approach is that? But when it comes to material life as a whole, that's true. You're going to lose every game. The illusory energy will give you some hope of winning. But you're always going to lose. You can be kicked out of your body at any moment. You don't know when. And what your next body will be, you don't know. Isn't that total defeat? Therefore, it's intelligent to be pessimistic about material life. That's the beginning of intelligence. But Srila Prabhupada, what he's referring to is that you have something else available to you. Because you have something else, another reality available to you, therefore you can admit the reality of material existence and be pessimistic. Because you're not meant for material existence. Okay, but what else is there to do? This is the contribution of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Sri Nityananda Prabhu. They are giving you the taste of the superior reality. Chaitanya Charitamrita gives the beautiful allegory of how the sun and the moon have arisen together. You've never seen that, of course, but similarly, you've never seen anyone as merciful as Sri Chaitanya Sri Nityananda. So it's an appropriate metaphor. We'll read from one purport. The poetical comparison of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda to the sun and moon is very significant. The living entities are spiritual sparks, and their constitutional position is to render devotional service to the Supreme Lord in full Krishna consciousness. So-called pious activities and other ritualistic performances, pious or impious, as well as the desire to escape from material existence, are all considered to be coverings of these spiritual sparks. There's a deep point that even the desire to escape from material existence, as separate from devotional service, that is a material covering of the spiritual spark. Just see how deep that knowledge is. You would think if someone actually realizes the fault of material existence and wants to get out, wow, that's so high. It is the sign of some intelligence, but still, you haven't gotten onto the spiritual platform of devotional service. So therefore, even the desire to escape from material existence, as separate from the desire to engage in devotional service, is a material covering. The living entities must get free from these superfluous coverings and fully engage in Krishna consciousness. The purpose of the appearance of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda is to dispel the darkness of the soul. Before their appearance, all these superfluous activities of the living entities were covering Krishna consciousness. But after the appearance of these two brothers, people's hearts are becoming cleansed, and they are again becoming situated in the real position of Krishna consciousness. You see, our natural impulse is to engage in Krishna service, in devotional service. And you all are getting a taste of that. The more a taste you get from serving Krishna, the more you chant and dance like a mad person. Because you've got a taste. We've commented so many times. How is it? You can go on for hours just saying three words over and over again. Jumping up and down and swing each other around. It's because the natural impulses of the spirit soul in relation to Krishna are becoming manifest. You're actually getting a taste of the ultimate reality. You may wonder, all right, we are hearing this metaphor about Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda. But could it be that all this talk about Krishna's pastimes, Krishna's lila, Gaura lila, Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, maybe it's just some kind of allegory or metaphor to make us more inspired and more moral and religious in our material activities? But as we explain, morality is actually not on the spiritual platform. This is why you find in Srimad Bhagavatam, in the Vedas, the Purusharta, the four objectives of life presented. Dharma, Artha, Kama, Moksha. Religion, in the ordinary sense, for the sake of prosperity, artha. And then, when there's prosperity, there can be kama, sense gratification. And then you're supposed to, in a civilized humanity, you're supposed to get tired of the sense gratification and aspire for liberation. From the viewpoint of Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, from the viewpoint of Srimad Bhagavatam, those objectives which seem so high today, dharma. How many people do you meet walking around the street saying, you know, I've got to follow dharma? It's a rare person you meet on book distribution who, you know, excuse me, where are you coming from? Where are you going? You know, I'm trying to follow dharma. It's so rare. If ever, even if it happens once. Material religiosity means I'll be good and then I'll have a better life. Now it's true on the material platform, if you're morally good, you do have a materially better life. But this is all still on the platform of material existence. That's why the Bhagavatam begins. Dharma projita kaitavotra. Kaitava dharma. Cheating religion. Cheating dharma means dharma perform for any reason except for Krishna's pleasure. Dharma perform for prosperity, for good sense gratification, even for freedom from material existence, as conceived of separate from devotional service. Because so-called freedom from material existence, as conceived of as separate from devotional service, means you want to merge into the Supreme Absolute Truth. And by merging into the Supreme Absolute Truth, how can you ever engage in service? Therefore, the thought is so reprehensible for a bhakti yogi. Merge into the Supreme Absolute Truth. How will I serve? What is life without service? So what Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda are giving is the taste of the spiritual reality, where the serving propensity of a living entity goes on in perfection in various loving relationships. So actually, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur points out why he was defending Krishna Leela. Some of the British empirical scholars were saying, oh, these allegories are very nice. These Hindu metaphors are very exotic, very attractive. Surely, of course, no one will take it literally. 7-year-old boy lifting up Govardhan Hill. And an 8-year-old boy, you know, dancing in the middle of the night with the most attractive women in existence. So the British scholars who first began to pore over Vedic literature, they were sure these are very exotic tales. And then they began to theorize. Because the Indian people repress their sexuality, and because they follow these strict cultural parameters, therefore they, through their myths, through their allegories, they release all that pent-up energy. Because their culture is very puritanical. It's more strict than so-called Victorian culture in Old Britain. Because of that, therefore, they need myths and allegories that, you know, just let their subconsciousness come out. So therefore, there's this Krishna Leela. This Gopi Jana Balava dances with the gopis. And this is their subliminal release into the world of myth. Flights of fantasy. And of course, contemporary Western civilization will say, okay, very nice exotic myths, but we don't need it. We've got the real thing. Why not just, you know, have your parties be an animal? And why do you need to hear about these myths in which you can fantasize? So what was Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur's response to that? He turned it upside down. He said, actually, in your ignorance, you don't know. The real allegory is material existence. Material existence is an allegory that's based on reality. The male-female affairs of material existence are actually an allegorical, metaphorical representation of reality. So he just turned it all upside down and basically said, you're living a myth. Your male-female affairs are an allegory based on the perfect and pure loving affairs of the spiritual world. That really makes you think. And then Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur went on to explain that. How can you deny that the most charming experience, most engrossing experience in material life, how can you say it's not present in the ultimate reality? If he pointed out, if you just present to people ordinary morality, you're actually crippling them. Because the purpose of real dharma is actually not to be moral. The purpose of real dharma is to be a spirit soul engaged in relationship with the Supreme Soul. Morality is meant just to cleanse you and prevent you from performing activities that are injurious to your spiritual expression. And your spiritual expression means engaging in the transcendental loving service of Krishna. But mundane morality is not the goal. It's just part of the recuperative process. But when you're a pure spirit soul, how is it that you need mundane morality? Mundane morality is in relationship to the material body and mind. But when you look at Krishna Leela, you're not looking at anything that involves material bodies and minds. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur is very analytical and very powerful in his refusal to deny the principle of sense gratification as a whole. He refused to unilaterally knock out sense gratification. And Srila Prabhupada followed his footsteps in his explanations. You can read in the Krishna book. The principle of sense gratification is universal throughout all existence. What? I thought we're supposed to deny sense gratification, give it all up. Be moral. Bite your tongue. Clench your fists. Hold on. Instead, we find out that sense gratification will always be there. The question is, who is the sense gratification for? That is the question. Krishna consciousness, bhakti means the sense gratification is for Krishna. Material life means the sense gratification is for us. In our imagination that we're separate from Krishna. So, bhakti does not deny sense gratification. So I want you all to take a deep breath and sigh of relief. It's simply the question of who is the sense gratification for? So Krishna's pastimes mean all the gratifications for Krishna. And our foolish attempt to imitate Krishna as the enjoyer means all the gratifications for me. Me and my friends of the moment. My significant other of the moment. Let there be good times for us all. So in this way, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur dealt with this criticism that Krishna Leela is immoral. You see, yes, it is immoral because it has nothing to do with material bodies and minds. Morality is dealing with material bodies and minds. So yes, Krishna Leela is immoral. Krishna's loving affairs have nothing to do with anything material. Therefore, you can't subject them to mundane morality. Mundane morality is for material bodies, material minds. Krishna can do whatever he likes because everything is his pure spiritual energy. He can make the spiritual energy act as material energy. He can make the material energy act as spiritual energy. So in Krishna Leela, Krishna's pastimes, he's demonstrating the complete freedom of the spiritual world and inviting you, come join. Yet we are so resistant. Because we're naturally wondering, I hear what you're saying, Krishna, but what's the taste going to be like? I need some taste now to motivate me. So, Krishna has made his strict proposal in Bhagavad Gita. Give it up, just surrender to me, do what I say. Later we talk about the taste. First surrender, first give up. Now that, in the age of Kali, would take an abnormally, exceptionally strong person to accept that offer. Okay, I just drop everything, do what Krishna says. Give up all my tastes that I'm trying to savor material existence. Just surrender to Krishna. People in Kali Yuga are too weak, too decrepit to do something like that. And Krishna knows it. And Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami explains in Chaitanya Charitamrita that Krishna himself saw. I said surrender to me. They don't understand what I'm talking about. They're not accepting the proposal. Therefore, I'll come as my own devotee. I'll come as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And I'll just distribute the taste of loving me even to persons who don't know me. So Srila Prabhupada reiterated this point again and again in the shortest lecture, 2.5 minutes before he ended in ecstatic symptoms and walked out of the room. How can you have the taste of loving someone when you don't know the person? But this is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda have done. They're distributing the taste of loving someone to persons who have no knowledge of that beloved. Therefore, parama karuna bhavam dvijana nittai rora chandra. They are supremely merciful, Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda. They're the essence of all avatars. So by Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda's mercy, the sun and the moon rising simultaneously, they're letting you see that indeed material life is an allegory. Manufactured allegory based on the spiritual reality. There's sense gratification in the material world, there's sense gratification in the spiritual world. The difference is who is the sense gratification meant for. Now if you want to go into it more, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur does that. He says, okay, let's look, see. Your sense gratification in the material world, which you consider so important and so necessary, and because you get so many problems from it, you have your mundane morality. Look what's happening. You're operating in an oppressive material atmosphere, and your very instruments of sense gratification are so faulty. See? Those two strikes against you. Oppressive material atmosphere that you're operating in, and your very mechanisms are so problematic. Therefore, allegory. What you're trying to do in the faulty material atmosphere with your faulty mechanisms is an allegory. It's an allegory based on a reality which you've forgotten. And that reality cannot be approached with material mind and senses. That's why we said, Atat Sri Krishna Namati, Nabhaved Grayan. No one can understand anything about the name, form, qualities, and pastimes of Krishna with your blunt material senses. But by devotional service beginning with the tongue, chanting Hare Krishna, tasting food offered to Krishna with love and devotion, gradually the spiritual reality begins to become known to you. Then, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur says, let's look at Krishna's sense gratification. No oppressive material atmosphere in the slightest. In fact, the atmosphere that Krishna Leela goes on in, everything is supportive of whatever Krishna wants whenever he wants it. When Krishna enters the forest in Vrindavan, all six seasons are present. He can go to one forest and experience summer, and then he can wander into another forest and experience spring. Everything just happens completely for his pleasure. Even when Krishna presents his pastimes in the material world, and people can see with their material eyes, but they don't see. But just because the pastimes are apparently taking place in the material world, still they have nothing to do with the material energy. So even though someone may look at Krishna when he's physically manifest to ordinary vision, they don't know what they're looking at. And even though they can see with their naked eyes, they cannot understand the all spiritual pastimes of Krishna. And even though they think they're seeing with their material eyes, that doesn't mean that Krishna's pastimes are material. This is what's baffling about Krishna's manifest lila. Therefore, the acharyas explained that when Krishna was present 5,000 years ago, everyone could see him. But then again, very few could see him. Everyone could see a person, but they didn't understand what they're looking at. It's like if you haven't studied biology and you look through a microscope, you'll see, but you won't know what you're seeing. Who knows what you look through a microscope, you'll see these squiggly things or what is that? But a trained biologist can understand what he or she is seeing through the microscope. So similarly, when Krishna was present 5,000 years ago, very few persons understood him as he is in truth. Most thought he's the most powerful human being on the planet. in the same way that you would think so-and-so is the best rugby player. Krishna, he's the most powerful person. So-and-so is the most powerful politician or most powerful movie star. That's how you thought of Krishna. Some lesser amount thought he was a demigod. Fewer still thought he's the super soul in everyone's heart. But it was a very rare person who, even though Krishna has manifested physical vision, it's a very rare person who understood this is Swayam Bhagavan, the original personality of God. Just because people could see Krishna with their physical vision doesn't mean that Krishna's pastimes are material. Please think about that point. Because generally, your bias is, I see with my material eyes, just like I look at the deity, or I hear the Hare Krishna mantra, therefore it must be material. Try to see how that thought mechanism is there. I'm tasting prasad with my tongue, therefore it must be material, but it's really good material stuff. It's like when people come to our outreach centers and the cooks are really diligent and saturating the food with bhakti. And the people, you walk by the tables and the people are saying, what are they putting that food? Must be that mantra. They don't care. Whatever it is, anyway, let's just go on eating. They'll know what it is. Who cares? It's good food. So you may have that attitude towards all aspects of bhakti. Deities, I don't know what they are. The Hare Krishna mantra, I don't know what it is. But anyway, I feel less stressed. I feel like my life has meaning. Okay, leave it at that. You have to go to a higher level. You have to dare to consider that even though it seems you're interacting with spiritual paraphernalia, with your material senses, actually the spiritual paraphernalia is not material. Even though you're hearing about Krishna with material ears, Krishna is not material. This is how, part of how Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur defended Krishna Lila. Yes, Krishna is immoral. He has nothing to do with mundane morality because he has no material body. Krishna's senses are always out of control. Because whatever he does is perfect. You have to control your senses due to imperfection. But Krishna's perfect. So his senses are always out of control. That's what it means to be the supreme enjoyer, Govinda. And Krishna's intimate devotees, they know his senses are always out of control. Why shouldn't they be? There's no material atmosphere, there's no material bodies. His senses are Angan Yasya Sakalendriya Vrittimanti Govinda Madhipurushita Mahamajana. His senses are perfect, pure, complete, interchangeable. Every sense can do the function of the other sense. Whereas in material life, the senses are restricted to just one function, and that is executed so imperfectly. So in this way, Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, in defending Krishna Lila to the British empirical mindset, also pointed out what is real dharma. Real dharma means not to get the blessings of God so that you can have a nice life on earth. Real dharma means to revive your loving propensity for Krishna. Get beyond the material body and mind. Revive your spiritual identity and engage in loving relationship with Krishna. In other words, Why deny the most charming and engrossing aspect of material existence? Why deny that in the Supreme? So therefore, Srila Prabhupada resoundingly declare, first verse in Bhagavatam, Janmadi Yasata, the absolute truth is that from which everything emanates. That's what Prabhupada would emphasize. Everything means everything. How can you deny spiritual amour in the Supreme Absolute Truth if everything emanates from the Absolute? So in this way, Bhagavatam shoves aside mundane religion, which has its purpose for conditioned souls. Don't do this, don't do that. That's right. You have to be strict about that in your material body and mind. But in the spiritual world, what's the need of morality? There's no material body, there's no material mind. You can actually be all that you can be and be yourself. I know sometimes our devotees wonder, oh, why do I have to just, these rules and regulations, why can't I just be me? Just let it flow. And sometimes you become falsely attracted to the mirth and merriment of ordinary life. They look so carefree. I say, what? For example, if you're in Wellington on a Friday night when everyone's preparing to party and there's such an atmosphere of false anticipation of happiness in the air. The girls all decked out in their party clothes, you know, their black dresses of minimal length. Everyone's got this, you know, there's this, the atmosphere is surcharged, like, it's out there, we're going to get it. That excitement, that anticipation, actually is there in the spiritual world in perfection. When evening time descends upon Vrindavan, all the perfect beings there, in association with the Supreme Perfect, they know what that means. Krishna actually, he goes to sleep at night. His mother, Mother Yashoda, tucks him in. She makes sure he has a little snack before he goes to rest. And she has all the servants prepare Krishna to go to sleep. And Krishna does go to sleep. Little Krishna does go to sleep. But not for long. It's in Krishna, Nankishore, also known as Kishore Shekhar, the best of the teenagers. Krishna knows how to, you know, how to do the teenage romance. You may have heard the expression, the night time is the right time. Krishna knows that. He's the perfection of that. So Mother Yashoda, she, with pure maternal affection, vatsalya prem, love of Krishna and maternal rasa, she makes sure that Krishna goes to sleep. And Krishna does go to sleep. He reciprocates with Mother Yashoda. Everyone in Vrindavan goes to sleep. Well, not everyone. After a short time, Krishna wakes up and he starts playing his flute. And the right persons hear the flute. And the wrong persons don't hear the flute. And off they go into the forest. In order to hear those pastimes, you have to be careful. Because the tendency is to hear about Krishna's confidential pastimes and you think, wow, that's cool, that's for me. It is for you, but not in your conditioned state. Meaning, you can't be the enjoyer. You can simply, in your perfected state, assist in Krishna's enjoyment.
So how can you apply morality to Krishna when he has no material body? He's Satchidananda Vigraha. He's eternal, full of knowledge and bliss. That's what his body is composed of. Eternity, full knowledge and complete bliss. And what is your body composed of? Why do you have to bathe yourself, take a shower, use soap, flush things down the toilet? Those are the secrets of your beauty. Now in Goloka Vrindavan, in the topmost portion of the spiritual world, Krishna does take a bath, even though he's the supreme pure. Why does he take a bath? Because Mother Yasoda wants him clean, even though he's infinitely clean. So he agrees, because of Mother Yasoda's love. She wants to feed him, so Krishna becomes hungry, simply to reciprocate with her. Real spiritual knowledge has to present the immoral activities of the spiritual world, where there are no material bodies, therefore there's no need of conventional morality. So bhakti both recognizes the need for conventional morality in the conditioned state and the complete abandoning of conventional morality in the perfect and pure state. Because sense gratification is so problematic in the material world, there are restrictions. Why is it problematic? Always remind yourself. The atmosphere is oppressive, and your mechanisms are faulty. The very mechanisms by which you try to enjoy amour, they are defective. And in fact, those very mechanisms, when they're afflicted by a terminal disease, those are the most deadly terminal diseases. The very mechanisms that are the male female's prime focus for enjoyment, they become, when they're afflicted by cancer, life becomes horrible. The amour of the spiritual world has nothing to do with material mechanisms or the modes of material nature. Therefore, why? Why subject Krishna to conventional morality? Why should you be puffed up? Krishna, you shouldn't do this, you shouldn't do that. He can do whatever he likes. It's the spiritual energy without a drop of material contamination. So Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda want to give a taste of that complete spiritual freedom, that complete spiritual reality, even to persons who have no knowledge of Krishna. Therefore, the sun and the moon have arisen simultaneously to distribute this taste of complete freedom, in which your optimism can be unlimited, and that unlimited optimism is 100% well-founded, without a doubt. So Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, I want to give that taste. In this way, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur turned the whole charge, the accusation against Krishna, that Krishna is immoral. He turned it upside down. Yes, Krishna is immoral. That's why he's supreme. He has no need of controlling his senses. He has no need of mundane guidelines, because there's nothing mundane about him. So then he explained, if your so-called spiritual or religious presentation doesn't go beyond morality, then it is deficient, it is incomplete, and injurious in the ultimate sense. Not in the beginning sense, it's injurious, but in the ultimate sense, it's injurious because you are leveling the playing field, so to speak. You have to control your senses in material life, and then you're implying that spiritual perfection also means you have to follow rigid guidelines. Control your senses, control your material body and mind. Where is the understanding of the unrestricted pleasure, of the unrestricted realm? So in so many types of religions, there's this idea of heaven. What do you do in heaven? If you have no knowledge of the perfect and free spiritual activities of the pure spiritual personalities in the spiritual world, heaven, what do they do up there? Remember that, probably, I guess, is the most famous Protestant preacher, not only in the USA, but he covered the world, Billy Graham. He made the famous statement. Someone asked him, what are you going to do when you go to heaven? I know exactly what I'm going to do. He used to fill huge sports stadiums. 50,000 people came to hear his lecture. And he was trying to do some good. Presenting, meat-eater religiosity. Trying to do some good. What am I going to do when I get to heaven? I'm going to drive all over in a yellow Cadillac. Why not? I sympathize with him. If you don't know anything, why not? Let's be sympathetic. What else are you going to say if you don't know anything? I sympathize with him completely. I understand. Okay, well, what's the most fun thing I can think of doing in this world? What would be my highest material ambition? That must be heaven. My highest material ambition would have a big, bright, yellow cat. Okay, that's what I'm going to do when I get to heaven. So without this knowledge of the spiritual world, where you see relationships executed in perfection, you won't be inspired to give up material life. So one final point, Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati, that look, in material life, you find five relationships that are always there. That's because they're allegories based on the reality of the spiritual world. You'll find shantaras, neutrality, in the material world, in terms of people's impartial, neutral dealings to others. You don't bother me, I don't bother you. A lot of New Zealand can be like that. You stay in your batch, in your neck of the woods, in your valley, I stay in mine. You don't judge me, I don't judge you. This is kind of Kali Yuga shantaras. We're all even, we're all equal. You don't agitate me, I don't agitate you. We coexist. And then that shantaras, that neutrality, also extends to inanimate objects in terms of all the paraphernalia of your material existence. And then, of course, more easily to recognize in material life are the rasas, the perverted rasas, which involve emotional dynamics. Shantaras in the material world and in the spiritual world don't have emotional dynamics to any real degree. The emotional dynamics begin with servitude, dasyaras. And then those emotional dynamics increase further. Friendship, parental, and then the peak is amor. If you have no knowledge of how those five relationships can go on in perfection, you'll never be attracted to perfection. Except by saying, I'll become one with the perfection. That's as far as you can go. And with that desire, that perverse desire, because there's no service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you miss out. You actually commit suicide. Anything that negates your service propensity is suicide. But you don't know anything else, so you figure material life is so frustrating, material relationships are so frustrating, let me annihilate my identity, either through voidism, or let me annihilate my identity by becoming one with everything. So Lord Chaitanya, Lord Nityananda, attract you by giving you a taste. Although Lord Chaitanya is developed, he's demonstrating the activities of a Madhurya Bhakta, a devotee absorbed in confidential love of Krishna. Nevertheless, he came to support and revive all the rasas with Krishna, as stated in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Not just one rasa, all the rasas. So I hope now you can see the whole spectrum of so-called spirituality and why the Bhagavatam says, out with it all. Out with any spirituality that doesn't focus 100% on giving pleasure to Krishna as the all in all. Dharma projita kite devotra. Sweep it out. You take a broom and you sweep some dust out of it. Out with the mystic yoga, out with the impersonal merging. What to speak of? Out with religion for economic prosperity. Out it all goes. Don't leave anything in the room except the pure, unadulterated desire of the spirit soul to please Krishna's senses. So this is why Lord Chaitanya, Lord Chinanda are celebrated for having unsurpassable mercy. They're giving a taste of that realm in which there's nothing else except the desire of the soul to love the Supreme Soul, the love supreme. They're giving a taste of that to persons who know nothing about it. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.